Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Crisis Point podcast. My name's Ryan. Today, I'm here with my co-host, Shane.
Hello.
And our returning guest, Ben.
Hello.
All right. So today, Shane, you had this idea of kind of kicking off our episodes with talking about the games we've played and, you know, the other hobby stuff that we've done on the side. So do you want to get started with that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, just trying to figure out what we're up to, you know, in the MCP, in the world of MCP.
Yeah. So obviously you've been kind of, actually, now that I think about this, maybe you're not the person to start with.
I mean, it's been a roller coaster. Okay. But Ben, what have you been doing? What have you been doing?
I've had a couple of ventures. My wife, Alyssa, and I just ventured to Oneonta, New York, yesterday, to be on the stream of the Professional Casual Network, where we played the Organized Play Kit Separation Anxiety, which is the one with the symbiotes. That was super, super cool. I had a lot of fun doing that. Alyssa ended up winning. She brought, we changed the rules. Normally you're supposed to have 11 points, but I invited them to say, what if we do 14 points so I can take all of my Slavs? So we did a 14 point play, and Alyssa brought Dormammu and She-Hulk and proceeded to murder everyone. So Dormammu, on one turn, it was the last turn, had the Carnage symbiote and had just played Smash. So he was doing an 11 dice, the obliteration attack, his big spender attack, for 11 dice that can bounce endlessly as long as the models aren't removed. And you get the correct die configuration. So she, on one action, had four attacks, and the Carnage symbiote gives you a, once you daze or KO a character once per round, you can paint the town red and get another free attack. So with one action, she had five attacks.
Oh my goodness. So what, how many attacks did she get on her second? Any, or was everybody dead?
She got one more. So wow. in one round, Dormammu had six attacks, and surprisingly, there was no one left on that side of the board.
That'll do it.
That in fact will do it. but it was great. I've also been preparing a couple of games ready for a potential tournament in Rochester, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, which we're really excited about. Shane and I, you and I just played a nice, fun, rousing game, which we cracked the code, guys. We cracked the code of how to beat Malekith. Yeah. We figured it out. Are you ready, Ryan?
Myself, and I'm sure lots of our listeners and viewers are waiting with bated breath.
You ready? This is great. Ready? roll good.
Oh.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't think of that earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. Just roll good. Hope that Malekith rolls poorly. Problem solved. Look at that.
Yeah. You did kind of leave out the other part. You can't just roll good. You need Malekith. Malekith also needs, it is a two-step program.
That is true. That is true.
It is imperative that you just follow those two steps.
Two steps.
And, you know, you can be any character with that strategy, actually, but especially Malekith.
Yeah. Well, you know, Magneto is invincible.
As we've determined.
As we've determined.
So I kind of have a somewhat serious question coming off of that.
Yeah.
So you said you need Malekith to roll bad and you need to roll good. Do you guys think that recalibration matrix is like an auto pick in a Malekith matchup, do you think?
If you have it. If it's on your roster, I think you gotta, right?
It was hard for me. So, and as Shane and I were playing our game today, you know, one of the struggles about playing Brotherhood is we have so many essential cards, in my opinion, that you have to take. For example, I don't know a world in which I take Juggernaut and not do you know who I am?
Or Mystique and Deception or Magnetic Refraction, right. And then Follow Me. And then I guess you have one left.
Yeah, I've got one left.
That can be, yeah, maybe. I don't know. What is the other card usually?
Asteroid M. Is,
oh
is
yeah, never mind.
Yeah, Asteroid M, which is pretty, you know, one of the things that people are really figuring out, and I'm gonna kick myself for this. I'm gonna give some anti Brotherhood tech right now. Great way to beat Brotherhood is just throw people away because you can especially only especially Magneto because he can only Asteroid M once. So
yeah,
it's really and you need that card. If you don't bring it, then you know. People get a gleeful smile, especially with what people are taking to beat Malekith in terms of like the Sam Avengers. It also really hurts Brotherhood. So, and then the last thing that at least for me that I've done is I just picked up the Hydra release stuff.
Nice.
And been starting putting them together. So, I'm excited about. Hydra is going to be bonkers, guys.
They look so. Alert. The models are so good. Can I just? I was talking to you about this, right, Ben? I think Arnim Zola is just so big. Like I was looking at the pictures of him on the AMG posted on their Twitter with like it was him and Strucker and then like Human Torch and somebody else all in one picture. In it, like before I saw that picture, I didn't realize how he's so tall. Arnim Zola is he even? I actually don't remember. Is Arnim Zola size 3? Or is he size 2?
I don't know, actually. Let's
I'm going to find this out right now. I got it pulled up. He is size 3. So, like, at least that makes sense. He's so much bigger than you'd think. Like, you see him next to another character, and it's like, oh, my God. He's a big robot. Hydra looks awesome. I'm excited for him.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's me. That's been me the last couple of days.
Ryan, what have you been doing?
So I unfortunately have not gotten any games in since our last recording, but I have gotten a lot done the army painting, I guess, if we want to get technical about its side of things. On Saturday night and Sunday night, I think I painted up Venom Hood, Demon Hood, and Voodoo.
The real question, Ryan, is have you painted Malekith yet?
Oh, yeah, no. Like... No. Because, so, the thing that I'm doing is I'm going through and I'm painting up. I had just built and, like, primed, like, basically my entire collection except for Hulk and Malekith, just white. Because what I'm doing is I'm just going through and I'm using the Army Painter, like, Mega Speed Paint set. And I'm just using that, like, almost exclusively, except I'm using, like, some, like, Citadel base and layer paints to like, you know, in case there's any sort of like overrun or any sort of accidental spillage, like touching them up with using that. But using the speed paints, like I'm able to get through like multiple models a night. Whereas if I were to be doing it just like the traditional way of miniature painting, it would be taking me days to get like a single mini done to like a satisfactory standard. That's just me. I don't know. But having an airbrush for helping to prime everything also works really well, especially living in upstate New York with the way the atmospherics up here react with spray can primers is not always the best. So a lot of stuff done on the hobby front. I'm basically done with all the models I plan on running at that tournament, but I think Malekith might show up unpainted or at least partially finished because I don't want to use the speed paints on him.
That's fair. He is very big.
There's a lot of big surface areas, especially like the wings and stuff on him and the Hulk too, where I don't want any accidental like pooling to happen. And then I'm just going to have to go back and like either dry brush it up or something. So it's like, screw it, I might as well take my time with these beautiful models and make them look the way I want them to look and not be all like blotchy looking. I used black on Venom and he turned out pretty okay with the Army Painter speed paint. So
yeah, I did contrast on my Venom with the Black Templar. And I wished I did it traditional because I did have to put a lot of coats on to get it to not look like splotchy or anything, because he is a very like flat surface model. There's not a lot of ridges.
Yeah.
But my Craven, on the other hand, with contrast, it was like,
yeah, he looked great. Whoa. Yeah.
Oh, it's so easy and it looks so good.
Yeah. I mean, you got, when we were hanging out that one night, you got a Goblin down, like you finished him in like an hour. It felt like, not even. But yeah, that's all I'm doing on the hobbies side.
So I guess me, I have been, so I got eliminated, spoiler alert, we're going to talk about it later, but I got eliminated from season 8 and the top 8 with my spider foes. So I've kind of been doing a lot of, you know, theory crafting, list building with other things than spider foes, because I've just been honed in on foes for so long now, that it's kind of nice to look at other stuff and play other stuff. And this is kind of like the early stages where I try to figure out what I want to play for next season. And there's a lot of time for that. But I've got to experiment. So I've been messing around with a list I made on TTS that is like a Wakanda Avengers dual affiliation list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm stealing a little bit of your old tech, Ben. I'm going to be honest with the Hulk in Wakanda, right. And just being like the tankiest Hulk ever. With lots of rerolls and kind of mitigating that the power that you're using. You're not always needing to spend 4 power on Hulk not Puny Banner, because you have these Wakanda rerolls that kind of build up and he always has power for them.
Yeah.
And it's just nice to have such a big beefy control piece that can just, that has great, he's just, Hulk's got it all, man. He's got excellent mobility.
Mm-hmm.
He hits like a truck. Mm-hmm. He has multiple throws in his kit that are like medium. He's got a medium throw and then a short throw, and they're both size 4.
Yeah.
He's just a beast. And I've really been enjoying him in Wakanda. And then the other half of the roster is Sam Avengers with some anti Malekith ideas kind of in there. So I wanted to do something that I wanted to play something that felt a little more meta, because I haven't been doing that at all. And but kind of, you know, throw in a little, I don't want it to just be Avengers, Sam Avengers. So having the option to go Wakanda, if anything, I feel like I would want to default to Wakanda and only pull out Sam Avengers in like the perilous times playing against Malekith. But no, I mean, it was fine. I mean, well, I had my final league game against Lucas Sheik, who we interviewed last week.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that later, but no, it's just been, you know, and I've also been in theory crafting with foes a little bit more, because I can't help myself.
Of course,
you're the Goblin King. We know this about you. And mm-hmm. Now the question is, I think I asked you this, but I don't remember. Did you put Killmonger in that list?
No, Killmonger. No.
Oh, you break.
Wait, I'm sorry. In the Wakanda list.
Yeah, and you're a Wakanda.
Oh, yes. I thought you were asking about my foes. I was like, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
no.
I thought so, too. I'm like, what?
Sorry. Yeah. No,
Killmonger's in there.
Okay, good. Yeah.
I actually got to play a game with Killmonger in the list, so.
Good. I think, I don't know if I did it to you, but there's some really fun and sneaky Usurp the Throne plays with Wakanda Forever. It's hilarious. For the person doing it, not for the person receiving it. But,
no, certainly.
That's exciting.
Yeah, and yeah, the Wakanda's fun. They're very like, they have so much control, especially when you have Hulk on the list. I mean, Killmonger does not have so much control, but he has a lot of killing. But yeah, I mean, just between Black Panther and Hulk, I mean, those two pieces alone on a list offer so much control threat, and on top of it, the list hits like a truck, and it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it right now, and we'll see where I land for affiliation wise later down the line, and like a couple months from now. But yeah, it's been fun playing something other than foes, you know.
Well, who knew that range 5 pushing 87% of characters in the game is really good.
Yeah.
So just guaranteed push from Shuri. Boop.
Pretty good. The one game I played, I didn't actually get to play Shuri because I don't remember what was it. It was 6, 10, 14. It was 16. So I had Killmonger and Panther and Hulk, which was 14.
Yeah.
I threw in Okoye. And Okoye ended up winning me that game. So, you know.
She's really good, especially in Wakanda. Yeah. Just I love Wakanda. Like I said, I mean, that was my second half roster for for the TTS League, and yeah, then you know, I mean, they are not very good against Malekith, but but they're very, very good, and they're super fun to play with. So
yeah, I mean, once upon a time, I mean, Black Panther, but in general, Wakanda was like the big bad.
My buddy Sooner won his one win with the TTS League was with Wakanda, if I remember correctly, and he's made several runs with Wakanda before people really gave them the respect. Wakanda on Gamma before Malekith showed up was you were gonna lose.
All the pushes and
all the pushes, the
Wakanda wave or whatever they call it.
Yes, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah,
but yeah, that's what I've been up to.
So I guess before we kind of continue here, I do want to take this opportunity before we get too deep into the episode to talk about some things that we've got coming up. I am currently running an actual Marvel Crisis Protocol League at Millennium Games in Rochester. We just kicked that off tonight, so this is Tuesday the 13th. And this is going to be running for 6 weeks. The way it works is we're going to score up, you know, the win-loss over the course of the 6 weeks. Every player is going to drop, you know, their worst performance, essentially. So if you're in the Rochester area or Western New York or somewhere around there and you want to come and get some Marvel Crisis Protocol games, that's a great way to do it. And then this weekend, Shane, you are going to be hosting a Marvel Crisis Protocol tournament on the 17th, and that is at Just Games, also in Rochester. So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's going to be I'm going to be TOing a Marvel Crisis Protocol tournament for the first time, which is exciting. I've TOed, you know, for plenty of other games before, mostly Kill Team. Yeah, we're having a Crisis Protocol tournament here at Just Games on Saturday, the 17th of September. So when this comes out, it'll be like a few days away. But yeah, it should be a lot of fun. I think already we've got like 11 players. I think we've got 9 slots left.
Yeah, Jason just signed up. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm hoping we can hit that 20 mark. That would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, get to sit back and watch some Crisis Pro. I'll be watching with envious green rage because I'm not playing in it.
You've played a lot recently, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm almost a little like,
I feel like
trying to burn myself out, but it's it'll be cool. So if you're in New York and you got nothing going on this weekend, you know, make the trip because there's tickets left and you get to meet us. And what isn't that a dream come true, isn't it?
I would imagine so.
I've met us, and it's awesome.
Yeah. It is pretty great.
It is pretty awesome.
All right.
And yeah.
How All did right, cool. Ryan, how did your league opener start today? I mean, how
it was great. So we had, I think so far we've had 9 or 10 people sign up tonight. We had, which was like our kickoff night, we had six or eight players in the store playing simultaneously.
Hey, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
I don't know when we want to do this, Shane, but I've had this big wheel in front of me.
The big wheel.
For the past, you know, how long, however long we've been recording, for the past 20 minutes, this big wheel has just been spinning in front of me, and I really want to just let it rip right now, Shane.
We got to be clear, because we don't want to excite people and make them think that the famous Spider-Man villain Big Wheel has been
released. No, not
the all-time great. That should be the next Foes leader, by the way. Big Wheel. Can we get a petition for that?
Wasn't there a leak for like a tank or a vehicle or something for Hydra affiliation?
It's an OP kit. It's a terrain feature and an OP
okay.
kit.
Okay.
I see. Yeah.
It's gonna be awesome.
I know what you're talking about, but anyway. Elaborate on the big wheel, Ryan, because we're all so curious.
So, guys, if you listened to our last episode of the Crisis Point podcast, you know that we have a new segment on the show here called Splash Mountain.
I love that sound.
That was the pause for the splash. I took my time editing that splash, yeah. So, Splash Mountain, what we do here is I've got a big wheel And on this big wheel is almost every single character in Marvel Crisis Protocol, excluding Ursa Major, who we did last week, and the upcoming Sentinels, because we're going to be talking about them later on in this episode. So concept is, I'm going to spin this wheel. It's going to land on one of these guys, and then we need to kind of fire from the hip, talk about what affiliation we would splash that character in, okay? Are you guys ready?
I was born ready.
All right, Splash Mountain incoming.
What is it?
I'm so excited.
Ooh, my God. It's Lockjaw.
Yes.
It's Lockjaw.
Oh, the goodest boy, Lockjaw.
My baby boy, Lockjaw.
I don't know anything about this character.
Oh, I love Lockjaw.
He is the goodest boy. He is the good boy of Marvel Crisis Protocol.
Yes.
And I've actually played Lockjaw a few times because those games where we messed around with Inhumans, Ben, I've had my share of Lockjaw games. I've never splashed him before, though.
I've splashed him a many times.
Do you want to start then? Sounds like you have experience.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you. So Lockjaw was one of the key components to, in my opinion, the best affiliation.
Oh,
Brotherhood.
Your fave.
Do you know who loves free movement, a range three movement? The best character of MCP, Magneto. Insert Magneto was right clip here. Ooze and Oz.
You call me, I'm right.
Lockjaw, in all seriousness, Lockjaw is amazing in Brotherhood. One of the things that Lockjaw struggles with is he has three superpowers at 3-3-2, and he doesn't have a great attack. What's amazing is if you take Lockjaw, who's a three-cost character, and pretty survivable, he's got 6 health, and he's got ways to generate, his own powers, he's got rerolls, but he does need some extra love in the power generation department. Brotherhood loves that. He has a throw, he has a terrain throw called Drop It, which, again, is just feeding into the Brotherhood theme,
mm-hmm.
That when you throw terrain features, you gain power equal to the size of the terrain feature spread out from your characters, which is just amazing. Magneto and some of the other slow, Scarlet Witch, love being teleported. Brotherhood love the attrition play style, so you don't want to waste actions moving. Who moves when you can slap, right? I mean, move or slap, we choose slap all day, right? And so Lockjaw not only gets you there, but when he gets you there, he also has this amazing superpower called Bloodhound, Interdimensional Bloodhound, which gives you an additional die. You know who loves additional dice and slapping people? Magneto.
Is it Magneto?
it's gonna be Magneto. He goes from a 6 dice re-rolling attack when you're within range 2 to now 7 dice re-rolling all your misses. Come on, he is the honorable best boy mutant dog in the world. Lockjaw, Team Brotherhood, all day, every day.
And I don't know if you mentioned this, but he can even throw terrain himself.
Yeah.
On top of it all, no, that's a good one, and I do. But that used to be kind of more common.
Yes,
didn't it?
Yep. It was the one of the ways to run Brotherhood, and some people still do it. There are two other 3-cost characters that try to do the same thing that Lockjaw does, and Heimdall and Darkstar. It's just usually not enough. Lockjaw, in my opinion, out of those three characters, in Brotherhood is probably still the best. So,
I like it.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of it. So while you were doing yours, I had time to come up with a unique one that I don't think anybody has maybe thought of. And that is Black Order, but not any Black Order.
I was
not
gonna
Thanos
think,
Black
yeah.
Order, but the Corvus Glaive leadership Black Order, because here's the thing about Corvus Glaive. Much like Magneto, the only area really where he struggles is in his mobility. he really kind of gets in your face through Mothership, aka the same thing as Asteroid M, the same thing that Magneto is dealing with. But once Corvus Glaive is in your face, he is swinging and banging, and he is wiping out everything in his path. Now, the Corvus Glaive leadership only applies to Brotherhood characters, which means that if you're playing the Corvus Glaive led Black Order, you're only going to have room for like one splash, really, if any. And the rest of your heavy hitters are going to be, you know, your Corvus Glaive with Reality Gem. Maybe you're feeling spicy and taking Power Stone Black Swan or Ebony Maw with a Space Gem. So your whatever splash you have, if any, is going to have to be a character that can get a lot of power on its own, that's kind of filling a gap that the team has. So the teleport is, like I said, it's helping make up for that lack of mobility on the part of Corvus Glaive, who's simply necessary. Him doing well is pretty imperative to that team doing well. He can help their attrition game by giving everybody an extra die against somebody, which is great. And this kind of ties into the fact that he doesn't get the leadership, basically, that Corvus Glaive has. But it's okay, because as long as he's being a good boy and he's hanging out near his Black Order buddies, he gets a bunch of power anyway, and he's totally okay with not getting that extra power. He's just making sure the rest of his killers are hopping in and getting in the fight. And for that reason, I like Lockjaw with Corvus Glaive leadership. I believe it's called First of the Black Order. And I hope I sold you on that.
I love it. I'm all for slaps. Just Slap Town Central.
He's not very good at slapping himself, so he needs to surround himself with good slappers.
So,
Ryan, you got anything?
Yeah, I'm going to take the final plunge here on Splash Mountain.
Oh, this is great.
All right, great. So I'm going to splash him into a Malekith-led Cabal. How do you like that? Am I
thought about that one.
Am I disgusting for this? Yeah, I mean, like, Lockjaw, with his teleport ability and everything, he gives the rest of the team outside of Malekith, because Malekith's movement is already so good, just more ways to get around the board.
And there's probably something to be said for the leadership allowing Lockjaw to move closer to his friends for who's a good boy. So when he does activate, he's getting that power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it gives him power. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So he'll it's like you're giving him four power for who's a good boy.
That is real good.
I love it. I mean,
and then Malekith is just great. I mean, obviously.
See, boo. Now insert boots.
Why are you calling me? I'm Ray.
I don't know if I can use that Hannibal Buress clip without getting the video demonetized. So we'll see how that goes, I guess.
Yeah. But that concludes Splash Mountain Part 2. We are going to get through these characters one at a time. We may never finish, because I think they're actually releasing characters faster than we are doing Splash Mountain segments. So, because right. We just had a bunch come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just had, what, two?
Six more characters?
Six, yeah, that sounds right.
I think that's right, yeah. Oh, well, Howling Commandos are in one box, so maybe it's five, I don't know.
Yeah, well, there's three of them, so.
That's true, so really it's like seven, eight characters.
Gotta talk about Dum Dum Dugan, yeah.
Yeah, and that other guy that nobody remembers.
the other
it's like Gabriel Myers. I'm guessing.
I don't even
right
know
now.
I gotta look. I don't even know.
It's I got it pulled up. His name is Gabriel Jones. I was close. I got the Gabriel part,
Jones.
Yeah. Never heard of him.
Sounds like a fake guy.
Yeah, I know Dum Dum Dugan though.
Yeah, Dum Dum. Everybody knows Dum Dum.
Everyone knows Dum Dum.
Speaking of the new characters coming out faster than we can do Splash Mountain segments for him. The Sentinels, their rules have been released. So I guess we can take a look at those now if you guys want.
Yeah, I am so excited for this team. I don't know if I'm going to get them or anything, but
what?
They're just so cool. I don't like.
What?
What do you mean?
I am hot buying six of these bad boys.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you're playing Brotherhood, so it makes sense.
I love them so much. Well, one, I love them because I need to destroy them because they hate mutants and hashtag mutant proud. But how can you, Shane, tell me right now, how can you not love slapping down at 14 points, three size five models? Just so obnoxious because they're all so huge.
Well, technically, the three of them are only 13 threat, which is actually just killer. That's brutal, right?
I can't. Our listeners know I can't do math. Math is hard.
But if you're playing at 14, you know what you can do? You can swap out one of those little sentinels for the one and only Cassandra Nova. Because she is going to be in this affiliation. It's probably just going to be the three characters. But let's talk about the data card. I'll go over Sentinel Mark IV really quick, and then we'll go over Sentinel Prime. Because I'm more excited for Sentinel Prime, but the base 4 threat Sentinel Mark IV. So he's defensive stats 3-4-4. He is a 7 health character. Size 5. Sheesh. Moving short.
I
love it. He's got a they have Plasma Blast as their builder, so it's a range 3 4 dice attack, which on the surface is kind of underwhelming, but you can spend up to 3 additional power and you add a die for each attack, you add a die for each power spent this way. So you can spend 1 power, get a 5 dice attack, which still kind of feels lame. You spend 2 power, get a 6 dice attack. Spend 3 power, get a 7 dice attack. I don't know why you do that, because you have a 3 power spend. I mean, I guess I know why you would do that, because you might want to regenerate some of that power. But his spender is 3 power as well, and range 3, which is suppression protocols. It's an 8 dice attack. The only special thing about it is on a wild trigger, it gets the suppression rule, which means that for each wild in the attack roll, and the defending character gains one of the following special conditions: incinerate, shock, or slow. All those are great, especially incinerate and shock. And what's nice about this is it's for each wild. Mm-hmm. It's not like if you get a wild, you can do one of these. So if you get multiple wilds, you're giving them incinerate and shock most of the time.
If I can interject, and we know because there's a wild trigger on this attack, you will never roll a wild with this attack.
I never get my wild trigger.
You'll never. Okay. Sorry. Just, we gotta make that.
It's true.
It is on 8 dice. I always get my wild triggers, but I'm bad.
I've seen it happen. It's hilarious.
It's uncanny how few wild triggers I get. It's one of the reasons I'm stopping playing Ronin, because it's just that character is just Mr. Wild Triggers.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on. One of the best parts about this kit, and Sentinel Prime has this going on too, is the 2 power restraint cables superpower. This is web snare. This is web line pull. Mm-hmm. Choose an enemy character within 4 and in line of sight, the chosen character is pushed towards this character short. You can only use this once per turn. That's such one of the best superpowers in the game, in my opinion. It's so good on Venom, so good on Gwen. And the fact that you're going to have potentially 3 of these bad boys with restraint cables on the field at the same time, that is a control team right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly, before we get into the rest, I just want to say, I feel like Sentinels as an affiliation is like one of the few, like almost, they look like a pure control, like tall team, which is weird. Like Thanos Black Order has a little bit of this going on, but you still like rely on Corvus killing everything at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. This feels like it's going to be a tall control team just based on the amount of times you can throw out restraint cables. Master Mold, you get to take 2 of these. So that, hence what we were talking about earlier. And then Power Matrix, at the end of this character's activation, it gains 2 power. That's kind of weird. I think this is the first time we've seen anything like this.
Yeah.
Yep. It's nice that you're going to be going into the next turn with power. They don't have any reactive abilities whatsoever. So you're not, I mean, presumably you could take team tactics cards that can really benefit from this. Like imagine having escort to safety with your Sentinels. Yep. That could be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Sentinel programming. This character cannot be advanced or pushed by mystic attacks or superpowers. And when you're defending against mystic attacks, this character counts blank results in the defense roll as 2 successes. So hard to kill them with mystic attacks. They are robots after all. I like the healthy side. My problem with this character is the the injured side. Oh, and also they have flight and immunity to bleed and poison. But yeah, the injured side, so he has one less health, same defense otherwise. But I hate what the builder becomes on this sentinel.
Oh, I love it. Oh, I'll let you.
I mean, it's I like it from like a fluff perspective.
Yeah.
But this, man, I think this sucks. So it becomes range 2, first of all, which sucks. It's still 4 dice. You can no longer like spend extra to get more dice. Instead, they get the War Machine treatment where whenever you roll a crit, you roll 2 dice for it. But then you suffer damage for each crit that you rolled. So you're killing yourself. And in the cherry on top is you don't even get power from this attack anymore. It's not even a builder. So you don't have a power generation thing other than your power matrix, which on your injured side is damaged. You only get 1 power at the end of your activation, which won't matter because you're going to be dead by the end of your own activation for using that stupid builder. Suppression protocol stays the same. I think everything else stays the same.
Yeah.
I don't love the basic Sentinel Mark IV. I mean, I love it from it looks fun. But the injured side is just brutal, man.
So a couple of things. Do we want to talk about Prime before we?
Yeah, let's talk about Prime. Honestly, I think Prime is the real star here, even for a 5 threat.
I think it wraps in my whole spiel about Sentinel. So I'll talk about Prime.
You want me to, or you should talk about Prime, it sounds like, because you've got stuff to say, obviously.
I'm just kind of chomping at the bit here, because I think there's some really interesting stuff that you could do with the Sentinels. Sentinel Prime, Mark IV. The only thing that bothers me about his card is it's the same art as the...
It's not the same, actually. His mouth is open slightly.
Oh, shut
is
up.
His mouth
the
open?
Normal one's
is
mouth
really?
Is closed.
Oh, yes, you're right. Oh, my goodness. look, I'm wrong. Internet, shame me. So defensively, he's a 3-4-4, just the same as the normal Mark IVs. Instead of 7 health, yes, 10 health.
Cool.
Which is huge. He is a 5 cost, as Shane said, size 5, moves small. And then everything else is just amazing. So Plasma Blast Mark II. Range 3, 5 dice, everything else the same as Plasma Blast as the normal Sentinel, so it's a gainer, you'll gain power equal to damage dealt, and you can spend up to 3 to add that many dice, which is great. So it's just it's Plasma Blast with an additional die. Yep. Suppression Protocols Mark 2 is literally the same thing as the normal Sentinels, except it costs 1 more for an additional die. Still has the wild trigger of suppression. So instead of rolling 8 dice, you're going to be rolling 9 dice for 4 power.
Can I just say, I think that's the only thing about the Mark IV I like more. I think I'd rather have the 3 power 8 dice version than the 4 power 9 dice version. That's it, though.
That's fair. I'm going to go back to the leadership.
Sure.
I'll go back to that. Restraint cables. The restraint cables are very, very good. They're not as good as all of the other pulls in the game. And the keys in some of the wording is it requires line of sight.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Venom does
not. Venom does not. Spider-Man does not. You know,
I think Gwen does.
I think Gwen does.
So it's whatever.
Yeah. So that hurts a little bit. But unless there's really a terrain feature in your way, the Sentinels shouldn't have too much of a problem.
They can see everywhere over everything. They're size 5.
Yeah.
They're size 5, so it's there's some really neat stuff that you can do with that. And we'll get back to it. The other amazing thing is Sentinel Prime does have a reactive superpower called Pattern Analysis. Oh, so good. While this character or an allied character is within range 4 of his huge base, and is attacking or defending during the modified dice step, you can spend up to 3 power. For each power spent, you can re-roll 1 die. Hey, you know Shuri has this ability? You know how amazing Shuri is? Yeah. Now, hear me out. Here's a character that can deal damage, is on a bigger base, and does the same thing. So yes, that's going to be absolutely amazing. I love it. Power Matrix, the same as the other Sentinels at the end of its activation. And that's going to be key for pattern analysis.
Right? Oh,
at the
yeah.
end of its activation, it's going to gain 2 power. So you can really re-roll your own dice with some assurance that you're going to get at least 2 power back. And I think that's going to be super strong. Sentinel programming, just as the same. You can't be pushed or advanced by mystical attacks or superpowers. While defending against mystical attacks, this character counts wilds in the results as 2 successes. Oh, just chef's kiss. Oh, love it. Flight, immunity to bleed and poison. On its backside, it goes down from 10 health to 8 health. And we actually don't see, so its plasma blast and its suppression protocol actually stay the same, which is
that's excellent. Yeah. That's one of my favorite parts.
I was going to say, is probably why Shane, you know, loves the Sentinel Prime. I do really like Sentinel Prime as well. I think it's going to he's going to be your consistent threat on the table. Restraint cables, pattern analysis stays the same. And so does Sentinel programming, as well as flight, immunity to bleed and poison. He does have some really another neat superpower passive called Overloading Power Core. Those power cores are really, they're just really, you know, they're not safe. You know, they
clearly speed, not.
You know, they didn't go through all the checklists. So during the power phase, roll 5 dice for each crit and hit you roll, you gain 1 power. If you roll a skull, at least 1 skull, you take a damage.
So, at least it's only 1, right?
Yeah, you can't accidentally nuke yourself down.
He's got 8 health, so.
He does have 8 health. Now, I did skip the leadership ability, and I did that intentionally because I want you to be jazzed up about this Sentinel Prime. I love Sentinel Prime. Spoiler alert, I think he's splash worthy and splash down.
I totally agree.
In so many affiliations, I actually think Brotherhood. I think he's a contender for one of those coveted 5 spots. I've got some shenanigans that I've been thinking about Sentinel Prime. So I think Sentinel Prime, just as he is, not as a leader, is great. But let's talk about his leadership ability. Mutant Hunters. When an enemy character is dazed, after the effect is resolved, choose a number of allied characters up to the dazed character's threat value. Each chosen character gains 1 power. You cannot gain more than 1 power as a result of this leadership ability each turn. So a couple nuanced things. The first part is it only triggers on dazes.
Which is so weird.
It is, and it's weird, and it's going to be frustrating because you're going to want, if you daze a character, you're going to want to KO them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not gaining the benefit from finishing models off, which is going to be kind of annoying. But the interesting thing is the trigger also states when an enemy character is dazed. So there are actually some interesting effects that can happen that will self-daze a trigger, that will daze during the, you know, a weird timing step, you know, in a round, and you can still gain the benefit of this ability, which is really neat. One of the funny things that Shane has been doing to me and to several opponents this season is dazing people during their turn as Spider-Foe's shenanigans.
Mm.
Guess what? If that was happening during, you know, if Goblin was hanging out with the Sentinels, all of a sudden you tricks and traps and you daze them during their turn because they've moved or have caused some other self-dazing effect. Congratulations, you get the power. It's really cool. So there's some neat things. Red Skull, Clea, a couple other characters can do a superpower and damage themselves and actually daze themselves. So you
and cubes, you could get dazed by a cube and gain the power for that.
Yep. Yeah. Cubes.
It's like getting another power phase if something dies to a cube.
Yes. Yeah. Which is
although actually maybe not because it's turn. So maybe that doesn't work.
I'm 90% sure that it will. those are some of the questions that are in the FAQ queue right now.
Yeah.
Is those weird timing results of if it's going to be consistent with some other things, you normally wouldn't gain the benefit of this. But I'm of the belief, along with some other folks, that the way that this is worded, you should gain the benefit of this leadership if you daze in the power phase. So, yeah. So I love the Sentinels. I think they're going to be really cool. I actually super, super duper love the Sentinel Mark IV's normal. 7 health with a 3-4-4 defense. And hear me out, are consistently in the range 4 bubble of Sentinel Prime is going to be a lot harder to chew through than people think.
I think they're going to do well with Sentinel Prime for sure. I don't think you're going to see the regular Mark IV splashed anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so either.
Yeah. And I think part of why I don't love the Sentinel Mark IV is because you look at their card right next to Prime, and it's kind of jarring how, like, even for the considering the fact he's a higher threat, he is so much better. Yeah. He has like 5 more total health. Offensively, he's way better. He doesn't have almost any of the downsides that the Mark IVs get. He's going to be an awesome 5 threat splash, I think, in a lot of affiliations.
And I think what's going to be really dependent on the success of, you know, if you're a listener who says, I want to rock robots and just slap them every game. One of the things that you need to do is you need to win the priority role every single time. and you need to play C or E maps. I think they're really, really going to struggle if they're forced to spread out. If you've got one Sentinel and then you have to split up a Sentinel Prime and the other Sentinel. Now, this is also foregoing. We don't know about splashes yet. You know, I mean, I think there's some Cassandra Nova is going to be amazing with them.
My faith.
It's just going to be some utter shenanigans because she can manipulate some. It's just
the amount of control you're going to have if you're able to take all 4.
Yeah, I mean, so we just talked about how amazing Wakanda is in Gamma. Hear me out. Now you're just robot Wakanda.
Oh my God, you're right.
On Gamma, and it's just going to be amazing. Hey, playing demons downtown. Oh, you want to stay out of range of being incinerated? Oops. I just restraint cable you into that, and unless you're Malekith or those folks who have auto throws, you're gonna be really sad because it's gonna be hard to push. It's gonna be hard to push advance and throw these big guys. Now, when you do, it's gonna hurt really bad because auto 6 damage is gonna be terrifying.
Yeah. Malekith is going to eat these guys alive.
Yeah. It's going to be a bad time when Bad Kitty comes and throws a Sentinel into another Sentinel.
Just take Brace for impact.
I mean, yeah, you're not wrong. And you can do that, you know, unashamed, knowing that you're going to at least gain, you know, 1 power out of it too. So, because at the end of your activation, you gain 2. So you've effectively, you know, paid the costs of the brace. So,
yeah, the first thing I'm going to look at if I make a Sentinel team is try to look at some of the first of all, we don't know what their tactics cards are going to be.
That's true.
So, I mean, there's a lot left to be learned about the power level of these guys. But I'm going to be looking a lot at those really good reactive superpowers or superpowers or team tactics cards. Because, being able to move and then gain this power is nice if you're Sentinel Prime because you have that reactive, the reactive ability for the rerolls. But for the regular, you know, the Mark IVs, they don't have any reactive powers. So that I think the best way to get mileage out of these guys, gaining that power at the end of their activation, is kind of setting up, you know, like I said earlier, having an escort to safety, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that could be awesome with these guys. I'm going to have to do a little bit more, theory crafting and cheesing to figure out what kind of stuff is cool and good with the Sentinels. But there's a lot of cool reactive superpowers in this game. Like Fallback, for instance, is another one.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Oops. No, hear me out. You know what small moving big bases really, really love?
What's that?
Is a interdimensional bloodhound.
Lockjaw.
Who says move range 3 on turn 1 and you've got a range 3 attack. So now your threat range is huge, right?
Yeah.
So there's some play, right? Now your pretty poo-poo 4-dice attack is now 5-dice with interventional bloodhound. You know, stuff like that is going to be great. I actually do think that Sentinel Prime for your next roster, your next foes roster, is a sweet splash for you, Shane.
Could be.
You know, it gives you that control that you want. And also, hear me out. It gives you dice consistency. It's Robot Shuri.
I won't lie. I mean, it's definitely on my radar. I don't want to say it's on the list yet. But, you know, there's still a bit to learn about these with the team tactics cards.
Definitely.
I got to put them on the table and try them. But no, I mean, with Juggernaut leaving my list, because that is something that's happening, and Ronin leaving my list, I've got some open, you know, we're doing tryouts right now. And Sentinel Prime has arrived for tryouts. I'm not going to say he's making the team, but...
Oh my goodness. Hang on a second here. You're saying that you're waving? You're waving Juggernaut?
Putting Juggs on the practice squad.
I don't love...
Yeah, at least sign him to the practice squad.
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons I'm putting Juggernaut. First of all, I don't think that... Juggernaut's an amazing character. I've made this known to you guys. I think Juggernaut is a top 5 character in the game.
For sure.
I just don't see a lot of matchups in the current makeup of my foes roster where I am taking him a lot. I mean, I say that I did take him in cuts against Matt Alex, which we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
And he was great there. He was an absolute all-star. I think there's other characters that I think would synergize a little bit better with my team that can fulfill that role a little bit.
Okay.
And I think Sentinel Prime is a contender for that. And like you said, he's not just this big beefy guy running around punching things. He's offering some support as well, while kind of having that same essence of like, you can't move me. I'm hard to displace. First of all, he's size 5. He can't be moved. He's basically got the Juggernaut helmet ability.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But he gets it on his injured side too. And he's size 5. So, you know, normally the thing is Juggernaut, it's like, well, you're allowed to throw him. Some things can throw size 4. Nothing throws size 5 except for, you know, one or two things in the game.
Yep.
Malekith. I am kind of trying to find, I don't know for sure that that Sentinel Prime is going to make my roster, but I'm definitely going to have to do some games with it just to see how I feel.
I love it.
And you said you might put him in your Brotherhood?
I he is same as he is invited to the tryouts.
Fair.
There are a couple of potential. Now this also depends on how amazing Pyro and Blob are going to be. I've been joyfully anticipating them, and that's another time for another day. But I love the potential fluff. I'm going to be painting my Sentinel Prime most likely the Days of Future Past Sentinels, where Magneto takes them over with some metal. I'm going to see if I can green stuff some metal coming out of them. So it looks like Magneto is controlling them. I just, you know, if our listeners don't know this, I love Magneto. Magneto is the best boy.
And, I think they picked up on that.
You know, I have a shirt. I have a shirt that says Magneto is right. So if it's on a shirt, it's got to be correct, right? It's one of those things. I think Sentinel Prime really can help a lot of teams with some dice consistency. Like you said, besides a very few amount of characters in the game, moving a size 5 character that's what Dormammu loves, right? So now Dormammu's got some competition. And heck, I didn't even think about this till just now, but what about Dormammu and some Sentinels? That's hilarious.
Oh, the biggest boys.
It was the big team thick, right? So
it's just the Monstars. Stars.
Yes. Yes, it's the Monstars.
Oh my god, yeah, because oh no. Man, if only Dormammu is threat 7, you could have all four.
That would at 20.
If we ever get a 21 threat crisis.
I love it.
That's the fun team to bring. Four that's size the, five guys.
That's the dream.
I guess now, I mean, we are coming up on an hour here, so I don't know how quickly we want to run through this, guys. But Shane, you made top 8 with Spider Foes. Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, you're leaving out the bad part, though, where I didn't make top 4.
Yes. But... yeah, unfortunate. But, I mean, still, it was a crazy run with an underrepresented faction, so that's some serious skill and grit. That was required on your part, and it was a very impressive showing. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it really was. I mean, I told Ben before the season, my goal was to go 3-3. Yeah, that I would have been satisfied with that. Once I got my third win and I was 3-1, I was like, yeah, pressure's off. And then I just won a bunch more games after that. So, ended up going 7-2, in total. And I'm really happy with that. I mean, that's well beyond what I could have possibly expected.
I guess we can just get started talking about your run here. I kind of want to start off just asking you questions, really, just to kind of paint a picture for the listeners here as to how that run went. So let's start off here with what made you choose Spider Foes going into this tournament?
It was purely flavor. This was my first league. And right off the bat, when I got into MCP, I was like, I want to play Foes. And they just seem like the coolest thing to me. And So when I started playing a lot of games, I was only playing Foes because I just wanted to keep it simple for myself. And then season 8 started rolling around and I was like, well, I've only played Foes, so I might as well take them to season 8 because at this rate, I don't have time to learn something else. I've played a bunch of games with this team. And to be clear at this point, like I wasn't really having a ton of success. Like I was doing okay. My win rate with Foes was pretty like 50-50 at this point. And I just wanted to do okay and take, cause I know I had no, delusions about how good the faction, the affiliation is. And, I said, you know, I'd like to go 50-50. Win loss, because I presume the faction is probably going to have less than that as their total win rate, which I believe they ended up with like 43-44% this season.
That sounds right.
So I put my roster together. I was prepping pretty hard to try to do the best I could, and yeah, I stuck to my guns with Foes. And I've always, Ryan, you know this about me. I don't like to play meta things. I like to find things that are good.
Yeah.
And I was hoping I could find some magic with Foes.
So you didn't take this faction like knowing, hey, I think Spider Foes are a good like counter meta pick in the current state at that time of the game.
Not at all. I just thought they were cool.
After your tournament run, do you think that Spider Foes are a potential meta like counter pick?
You know, if Malekith didn't come out, I would actually say yes. I actually really did not have a problem. Because the first 3 weeks of the league, my list and my playstyle was very different than what it has become. It was a lot more like pseudo criminal syndicate kingpin style, where it wasn't very attrition heavy. It was like, just take a lot of throws and take a lot of beefy characters and sit on secures. And I would use well-laid plans to like play anti-control or like anti, like, you know, like if I'm playing on an F shape or something, like an F shape extract, I would use that for anti-control. And yeah, the idea was beefy characters are harder to kill, so, and it was kind of inherently anti-attrition, but playing that a lot, and I kind of like beat my head against the wall with it. It's like very subpar as a playstyle. You're playing a much worse version of Criminal Syndicate Kingpin. Mm-hmm. And it was after the week three when you're able to switch your roster, where I made a bunch of changes. I put Mysterio on the list. I put Cassandra Nova on the list. I took Ak out. I took out Wele Plans because I just hate that card. And it became more of a reactive, like a lot of people say Trap House foes. Mm-hmm. That's like a thing that people say a lot. It's not so much Trap House, but it is because when I'm using traps and stuff, it's not really for the damage. It's mostly for the moves that I'm getting after that attack goes off. And getting that extra action economy is huge, especially for a character like Mysterio, who's kind of slow, or Nova, who has all these bubbles. Like, not only does she have that bubble, but she's got stealth, and she's got like the range 3 mind possession, and she can hit you outside of her stealth with like her builder. And it became this really reactive, out of activation playstyle that is way better, and it has a lot of mystic attacks, so it was really good against the big scary villain before Malekith came out, which was Shadowland Daredevil. And I went from losing to that a ton of times in a row to I haven't lost to it in a long time with my foes. And it still has a lot of control with Venom and Nova and stuff, so I can play against teams like Ben, like I can play against Brotherhood. I have ways to move the characters away, like shift Magneto around. But I think my list just simply was not equipped for Malekith. And that's one of the things I'm kind of targeting right now with my roster changes after the season, is how am I going to deal with Malekith? And I'm not too much worried about Hulk. I think I actually am okay against Hulk in my roster already. It's Malekith. Malekith is a huge problem for me. And maybe that's just a Malekith thing, and it's not so much a foes thing, but clearly there are a couple teams that have some game into Malekith. Foes, as I run them, as anybody runs them, to be honest, does not really have game against Malekith, and I need to look for that in my splashes.
All right, so how did you go about preparing for this tournament?
Playing a lot of games.
Yeah, that's pretty much playing, it.
Honestly, Ben and I prepped a ton.
Uh-huh.
We were doing practice games, and like for a while it was like, Ben, you would run my opponent's list against me.
Yeah.
And that was super helpful. If you are playing in the league next season, and have a practice partner and like help each other out, because that is so useful. And Ryan, you and I used to do this for
kill team. Yeah.
And it is so like insightful.
Yeah.
Like kind of seeing how the list, because you can read the roster and be like, oh yeah, it does this and that, and like this is what he's going for. But it's another thing to see it on the board.
Yeah.
And you might not know exactly what they're gonna do. But think of the scariest. Look at, like, when you look at the roster, what I would do is I would try to think of the thing I'm the most scared of, and try to have my practice partner play that.
Yeah.
Because the best case scenario is they play exactly that. Actually, the best case scenario is they don't play the thing that you were most worried about, which you're already okay with, unless like they throw a total curveball. And like the worst case scenario outside of the curveball is they're playing the thing you're scared against, but you've got a bunch of reps into it now, so you kind of know how to deal with it. So I think those practice games are crucial. And I would not have made it this far without them. So thank you, Ben.
Do I get to be like that little goblin scribe that was near the Goblin King? Is that me?
Oh, what's his? We were talking about this last week. The Salacious Crumb.
Yeah, Salacious Crumb. Oh, yeah, Jabba's little pet gremlin.
Yep.
That's me. My goodness. That's a laugh.
Disgusting. All right. You go ahead.
No. Sorry, Ryan. Yeah. Practice partners really make this game go a lot smoother. You know, as Shane was saying, the more reps you get into it, the less something gets scary and overwhelming and tilting and all of those things that we've talked about in the past. As much as Malekith is really, really frustrating right now, at least for me, the more I play into it, even with, you know, I play probably one of the worst affiliations going into Malekith, which is Brotherhood. If we're going to be honest, right? It's an uphill battle and it's frustrating, but I know what I'm going up against. so I can kind of prepare myself a little bit more mentally for it now. And yeah, so find practice partners, get more reps in, you know, if you have the time. It really makes it worthwhile.
So out of curiosity, how many prep games were you guys doing like a week?
Most of the time it was just one.
Gotcha.
For the most recent thing, the quarterfinals game against Lucas, I think we ran like four, but that was only we were only able to run four because half of those games, it was like turn right. One was so devastating. I was like, let's just try again and re-rack.
Right. I remember you telling me that now.
Right. So that was a thing.
Cool. Ben, do you have any questions for Shane?
Yeah. You know, Shane, what I know we answered it a little bit, but if someone's listening and it really gets excited about maybe a Green Goblin or maybe the Sinister Six, which is really the mass. I think we've got most of them in there. I think we're missing like Rhino, Vulture, a couple of the other, you know, staple names here. What would you tell someone coming into wanting to play Spider Foes? What would be some advice for them?
I would say, like, I guess it depends, like just like beginner level or like if you're trying to be competitive.
Yes.
Okay. I would say for a beginner, first of all, I think obviously you need to buy the Goblin box. Beyond that, I would recommend grabbing like the only one I would say, get all the boxes. You don't need to get Kingpin though. I don't think that's necessary. And the nice thing is there's only like three or four total boxes for Foes, two of which are single characters, so they're like cheaper. Don't rule out any of the affiliated characters. I mean, even I say don't take Kingpin, but even Kingpin, I think there's probably a world where you can make Kingpin work in Foes. This is a problem that I had where coming in, a lot of the common sentiment was, you know, don't bother with Carnage, he's too swingy. Don't bother with Mysterio, I heard that. And honestly, even Kraven gets a lot of crap too. I think find the characters that you like and you know, every character is good at something for the most part, unless you're playing OG Daredevil. And figure out what they're good at and find ways to lean into those things, because that's kind of what I did here, because I love Goblin, I'm playing him every game. And I discovered that I love Mysterio. And what do those two characters have in common other than being Foes affiliated? They have out of activation shenanigans. So I wanted to lean into that. And that's kind of where I looked for my splashes. If you're constructing a Foes roster, you need a two threat. I would recommend either Toad or Bullseye. Both are fine. I had Bullseye at first and then I switched to Toad and I am planning on keeping Toad. Until we get affiliated to at least. Get at least one five threat in there. I didn't have one in the first half, and I think having a five threat is really, really crucial. My favorite is Cassandra Nova. I think all Foes players should be running Cassandra Nova, if I'm being completely honest. I think she's just an all-star in the team. I don't think it's that bad to have a second five threat in Foes, to be honest. And that's kind of what I'm trying to figure out right now. I've got a few contenders. And then as far as your other splashes go, recognize that two of your four threats, your four threats other than Goblin are symbiotes who are really bad against certain attacks and are very matchup dependent. So try to fill in that gap, possibly. That's one direction that you can take. I went with Ronin. I no longer think Ronin is the option. I don't think that's the answer. And I'm going to try and figure out that part of it as well. And yeah, like, I don't know, just play the team a lot. And for Mysterio specifically, because Mysterio is, sorry, everybody, Mysterio is the most fun character to play in Marvel Crisis Protocol. I'm just going to say that. You're probably, a lot of people are going to play him once or twice and be like, this guy sucks. He's lethargic and slow and he does nothing. He's wheezing out there, just trying to get into the action. Make sure you're using him on the right crisis setups. Ideally, E or C shapes are probably best. You can also get away with them on like Scoundrels or something. But for me with Mysterio, I would play him a bunch and it was kind of like that. Like I thought he kind of sucked. But once you like figure out the play patterns for Mysterio and it kind of like unlocks, that character becomes so much more potent and so much more effective. And the stuff that he does just goes way beyond what you expect of a three threat a lot of the time. So play Mysterio.
So from the sounds of things, it sounds like Cassandra Nova, Mysterio, and then Toad potentially are kind of like some of the core models to your roster. Were there any other ones? Yeah. Am I getting that right?
As far as the splashes go, yeah, those are the splashes. I ran every foe except for Kingpin, and I didn't run Doc, which I think is something that a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
Doc is kind of like an auto take in a lot of foes rosters, and for me he was an auto take for a long time for a couple of reasons. First of all, people take him because of well-aid plans, and second, he's in the core box, so you know, and he's fast, he's got a medium base and wall crawler, he's got a good throw. I got really frustrated with well-aid plans, and I took it off my roster, which I think is probably the biggest deviation from the standard foes playstyle. I was using it a lot and really kind of banging my head against the wall trying to make it work. But the reality is about well-aid plans is there's a lot of setup. First of all, it needs to be a situation where it is actually worth using it. Like I think if you're on spider infected or something and they have two extracts and you have three, I don't really know if I even want to force well-aid plans, to be honest. A lot of the time you want to use it when they have three of the four or three of the five extracts, depending on what you're playing on.
Yeah.
If there's not a lot of extracts, yeah, I don't think you take it at all. Like if you're on Montesi or if you're on a single extract, I wouldn't bother. But it needs to be the situation to use it, which is sometimes not always presented. Both Goblin and Ock need to have three power, and neither of them can be dazed. It's an active power, so it has to be your turn. So if you don't have prio and you want to do it at the start of the turn, you might have to wait, in which case one of them might get dazed and then it comes back to you and you can't do it. On top of that, after all those conditions have been met, you still have to roll a bunch of dice and it can just do nothing. And I think a lot of people look at this card, and understandably so, and they only see the ceiling of what it can do. They see, oh my God, you can make everybody drop all their stuff and do a bunch of damage to them. A lot of the time, that's not what happens. I would use well-aid plans a lot. And oftentimes, I would try to only use it in situations where my opponent was holding three extracts. And oftentimes, two out of their three characters would drop their extract. Sometimes one out of the three. I don't think I would ever get all three. They would never take more than one damage. Maybe they'd take two. And it was all this setup, and sometimes it didn't even change the game that much. And the worst part of it for me that I think people overlook is it is really hard for Doc Ock to be a useful, good character on the board if he is spending power on well-aid plans. Mm-hmm. Goblin can get away with it because he's got a great builder, and you know he can still be useful in some ways. He's actually giving up his trick-or-treat, which kind of sucks to use well-aid plans a lot of the time. Unless he's loaded with power. But Doc, without power, is a very mediocre character. It's not easy for him to... Like, if all you have is zero power on Doc, you know, you throw your builder out, you hope that you get a crit, and you do some damage. Maybe you don't roll a crit. Maybe you don't do any damage. And then, you know, next turn, you've got two power. But the thing about Doc is he loves having three power, so he can do his throw or a spender. That's where the strength of that character comes in. And if you're using well-aid plans, Ock is, you're probably not getting a lot of mileage out of Ock unless he's like spiking like crazy left and right. So I even though I took Ock out of the roster, I think it's perfectly okay to have Ock on the roster. I just think that leaning on well-aid plans hurt me more than it helped me.
So you mentioned this a little bit, but what extracts and what secures did you take on your roster?
My extracts were both the F1s, so cubes and spider infected, and hammers. I am perfectly happy with all those. I don't want to change that at all, I don't think. I don't like single extracts with foes. I don't think they play that game very well. And I hate Montesi, because if I see Montesi, I don't really want to take my symbiotes quite as much, because suddenly there's a six dice attack on the board that can just wipe them.
Right.
But my secures, I took scoundrels, got intrusions and demons downtown. Intrusions and demons downtown, I think, are excellent picks with foes. A lot of what you want to be doing is sticking together if possible, because you've got the Nova aura with her psychic destruction. You've got Mysterio's tricks and traps. You've got Goblin's trick or treat. So they're wondering where they're able to walk in this little tight area where the objectives are. Mm-hmm. And if you have Venom as well, it's who can I attack without Venom, you know, lethal protectoring and swinging over and smacking me back. So I think that's the cognitive load is at its highest on situations like Demons Downtown, where everybody's kind of running up the middle and you have all these things they have to worry about. Scoundrels. Some people have told me I should take Mutant Madmen instead of Scoundrels. I get that on some level because Mutant Madmen, I do have a lot of characters with four dice defense for the flip, but I also run Mysterio a lot. And I also run Cassandra Nova a lot, who have one and two physical defense. So I kind of shied away from that. And Scoundrels, well, there are some teams who are really good at Scoundrels, like Web Warriors and Kingpin Criminal Syndicate. I don't think foes are bad at it either. Your leadership reroll, the defense reroll, happens after cover. So you can actually make the cover from the Scoundrel token go away. So I do like that. And I benefited from that a lot in my game against Matt Alex. So I'm probably going to stick with Scoundrels, and I also really like playing at high threats because it makes it easier for me to squeeze in Cassandra Nova. So yeah, that's kind of where I sit with my crises right now.
We're not going to go through all of them, but what were like the key tactics cards that you had selected for your roster? And then after this, you know, after your tournament run, are there any you wished you had chosen instead?
Oh, that for sure. As soon as cut happened, there was a couple cards I wish I took that I didn't. For starters, I wish I took Recalibration Matrix. I wish I found I tuned into that a little late. NashCon happened, I think, like the weekend after the cuts roster cut came in, and a lot of the really good players were already online for that one. I was not aware of that. So I didn't take it. Beyond that, there was certain card I wanted to take Smash with my foes really bad, and I'm still messing with that. I think it's okay on Goblin, setting up turn two, smashing a car and getting 2 7 dice builders, I think can be a nice way to swing an early lead. But generally speaking, I was kind of happy with my tactics cards. I had Sacrifice instead of Patch Up, and I think I was actually okay with Sacrifice. Although with Follow Me getting restricted, I'm going to be taking Sacrifice off, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But gotcha.
I mean, you have Venom's Lethal Protector, so yeah. Like, do you think that's like running those two in the same like Spider Foes roster? Do you think that's doing too much? Or
against Malekith, I didn't mind it. Because I liked being able to disrupt multiple of his attacks. But Ben, yeah, you know this. Every time I ran them together, one of them wouldn't get played. So yep. All that practice, I think I learned that maybe I don't need them both.
Okay.
Even though I love the theory behind it. But I just never, ever got the chance to play them both. So clearly that's telling me something.
It was purely a selfish question because I was thinking the same thing. Because I'm planning on running Venom in this upcoming tournament.
Jots down notes.
Tell me more.
And one more that I actually think I'm going to be running like permanently is No Matter the Cost. So I really want to use this for Cassandra Nova. One of the problems I've been running into with Cassandra Nova with her play patterns is I will walk up on turn one and I will do a mind possession and, you know, walk somebody somewhere dangerous or walk them away from me. And then what happens is turn two, Nova has one power because she just spent a power to get the mind possession off. So she's back to one power.
Right.
And then if I don't have prio or something, or, you know, I don't immediately go with her, she's in danger of having somebody run up to her and hit her because she doesn't have the power to use her tricks and traps or psychic distraction, whatever. But if you use no matter the cost, you can have that turn one. It feels weird using no matter the cost for one power attack. But what happens is you take a damage, use psychic distraction without spending, mind possession? Use mind possession for free. You take a damage, and then at the end of your turn, you have healing factor, so you just heal that damage back. And then turn two, you have psychic distraction online. So not only have you created space between yourself and the target by moving them, but you have allowed yourself to turn two be safe if they run up to you, relatively safe. So not to mention, even if that play doesn't come up, I think, later in the game, you know, maybe you have, you know, like a handful of power and you want to be able to use mind possession, or if you have, you know, if you have one power and you want to use mind possession twice in a turn, that's also an option. Just a huge fan of no matter the cost with Nova. And I didn't even think about that until well after cuts. So I'm going to start using that on her. I think that's a really cool card.
I guess circling back to the models you were taking, I guess what were the three in affiliation characters that you were taking the most?
Aside from Goblin.
Yeah.
Okay. I would say Mysterio showed up a lot as soon as he entered my roster. Venom showed up a ton. Venom's amazing. He was one of my MVPs this tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, probably Lizard. That's another way I deviate is I think a lot of FOS players auto take Lizard in every single game. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that because Lizard is phenomenal. It's one of the best three threats. But I take Lizard a lot less. A lot of the times I'd rather have Mysterio if the crisis setup allows it. And Carnage, I'd say, is a short, like barely behind Lizard. Carnage, the couple games that I did take Carnage, he was humongous for me.
Gotcha.
And then I only got to take Kraven once, which was a sad day. But he won, and he was good.
I think one of the most important things about FOS, more so than other affiliations, is I think what you'll see is a correlation between the player knowing good matchups. Where so for Brotherhood, it's pretty easy for me, despite whatever crisis we get, 80% of the time it's Magneto, Juggernaut, and Rogue for me. It's pretty easy, right? To just slap those three models down and actually have a pretty good chance in most cases. FOS really lives or dies by really understanding your matchups, right? One of the things that, Shane, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what we saw pretty early as you were playing more was Sinister Traps is really not that great.
Sinister Traps might be leaving my roster too.
Yeah, and as you play a little bit higher caliber players and kind of understand, different matchups, there are just some characters that you can Sinister Traps that actually prefer you to do some early damage to them, and it turns them on to doing some stuff that maybe you don't actually, you haven't seen before. Or you can look at a roster and go, oh wow, you don't actually have a lot of mystic and energy attacks, so Carnage is going to go bonkers this game, right?
Yep.
That's what you did against your Brotherhood opponent earlier in the league. Was, oh my goodness, there's
that was Black Order, but yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I always do that. Yeah, your Black Order opponent, was had a lot of physical attacks coming your way. You're like, this is the time to do it. So you slap down Carnage and Carnage went bonkers,
Yeah. That was the other thing I really liked in the current, Ryan, you were asking me earlier about the current meta matchups. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was very prevalent, especially on the East bracket, was X-Men. There's a lot of really good X-Men players running around, and they didn't have a great run in the cut, unfortunately, but I think X-Men went 6-0. We had like Sploosh was playing X-Men. We had Twitty playing X-Men, who I had to play. X-Men were kind of a menace in the East bracket. And I think FOS have a uniquely good matchup into into X-Men, being able to kind of take away their leadership and their cover aspect of their leadership in some ways. And also just, you know, there's kind of two halves to my roster and the play style, and there's the area control nonsense with Nova and Mysterio. but against Twitty and for instance, in my round six game, I lean into the other half, which is kind of the symbiote heavy attrition play style. Just being able to play against some of these teams that have a lot of three threat models, these teams that want to go six wide. And I consider doing this against Mad Alex too, is, you know, you don't always have to go the trap house list, as people call it. A lot of the time, you know, if you're up against these, if you're in a matchup where you expect to consistently get priority and there's not a ton of like heavy hitting energy in Mystic, you can take Carnage, and Carnage is going to eat those characters alive and win you a game, because that's the upside that that character has.
So I think that's pretty much all the questions I've got regarding your run, Shane. Is there anything else that you think we didn't cover or that you wanted to talk about before we close out this episode?
Oh, man. I could talk about foes forever. I mean, I don't really know if there's anything that we didn't touch on. I really like this team. I don't think it's like a total fluke or anything that I made top eight. I was lucky not to get Malekith earlier, I suppose, because I probably would have gotten blown away by that the second I played it. But they are a really interesting team. I'm so excited for the new foes release. I don't know what it's going to be.
Big wheel.
Top of my wish list. Big wheel. No, but I'd love an affiliated two threat so I can stop playing Toad. Toad's amazing. But
who do you think would be? Rampant speculation. Let's get into it. Who do you think the two threat would be for the spider foes?
For me, Shocker. Yeah, you were going to say it, Ben.
Yeah,
Shocker would make the most sense to me as a two threat. He just feels like a two threat. I can see him having some push shenanigans, maybe. Right now, I think Toad is the only two threat that can push anything, that has any control. And I can see Shocker doing that. He kind of fits the bill, too. He's like one of the lower level foes characters, like and I could see, I've also heard some people say maybe Prowler. For those of you unaware, Prowler, if you saw Into the Spider-Verse, he's Miles Morales's uncle, who turns into the bad guy. He could also be an interesting two threat, and it would be cool to get a Miles villain in there too, because that does kind of fit the bill.
Yeah.
I would actually, I know, and Shane disagree. We've had this conversation. Shane will disagree with me, but I think Vulture would be a great two threat.
Vulture is a two? I don't know.
Oh, I'm talking green goofy suit Vulture.
Oh, I love the green goofy suit. I hope it's not like some machine thing, like in Homecoming.
He is normally not, you know, a big threat to Spider-Man, you know. He does some shenanigans, but that I can also see, and let's see if I can get a good reaction out of Shane on this one. I want goofy looking Electro, yellow hat, goofy looking.
Oh, my favorite. You know,
where's that stupid picture of the the meme I'm talking about? Yeah.
That's my favorite. I love that so much.
I can see that version of Electro being two.
Like Blue Men Group Electro?
Me and the boys.
Me and the
Jamie
boys.
Jamie Foxx Blue Men Group.
So I think that one, I think when Electro actually becomes, an electric being, I actually think that that would be a very interesting in affiliation five threat.
It could work.
I also want to see Sandman.
Sandman is what everybody says for a five threat. I could see it.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like Sandman, I was talking about this with somebody. I feel like his threat or his like power level in the comics and across the media of Marvel, I feel like it varies wildly depending on what story you're reading. Sometimes it's like, how does anybody beat this guy?
Yeah.
And other times it's like, oh, Spider-Man beat Sandman. And you're like, wait, but in that other story, he couldn't. There's just no way. He's just invincible, right? So it depends on what kind of Sandman we get, I guess.
I've seen Spider-Man beat him with water. Just like throw some water at him, like wham.
And then also Rhino. I can see us getting like a Juggernaut Junior like 3 or 4 threat rhino.
Oh yeah, totally.
There's a lot of foes. I'd love to see a second leader. I don't know who that would be. I mean, that's, we've heard a lot of things. Like maybe we get a tactic card and like Doc can be a leader. I don't think they'll release another Doc because they already did the rival panel. And
yeah, I don't imagine another.
We don't need a third Doc Ock.
There's 3 Spider-Mans. So
that's give true. Me a, yeah, that's so give true.
Me, give me a third Doc Ock.
And, you know, speaking of Doc, if they did Doc Ock again, there's only one way I think they could get away with it. And that's if they were doing the Superior Spider-Man, where the story where Doc Ock takes over Spider-Man's body. And that was like a whole run that lasted for like a while. That would be the coolest foe. I don't even know if you could make him a foe, really, because he's kind of not a foe, but he also is Doc Ock. That could be a 5 threat. I mean, yeah, he is the superior Spider-Man, and we've already got 5 threat amazing Spider-Man. Maybe he needs to be a 6. Why not 7 threat? Why not 8?
Why not?
Why not? Why not 9? Give us our first 9.
All those numbers are superior to 5.
They math does say that they are higher than 9.
All right, cool. So I think that's going to wrap up this episode of the Crisis Point Podcast. Thank you guys so much out there for listening and tuning in on YouTube. If you got any feedback for us, or you know there's any topics that you want us to cover on the podcast here, you can leave those in the YouTube comments down below. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, make sure that you follow us and leave a rating. That really helps grow the podcast. And then, yeah, same thing with the YouTube, pretty much. Just like, comment, subscribe if you want to keep up to date with all of our latest episodes. Thank you guys for watching and tuning in, and we will see you all again in the next one.
And play Mysterio.